You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL Podcast. My name's Tom Davis. I'll be co-hosting the show. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Joe Richard. Joe, how's it going for you this week?
Banjo Bowl Part 2.
Well, that's this weekend. I don't know if that qualifies as how you do it this week.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Okay. Well, just
like it was important that Winnipeg win the West Final, but now it's important-er that they win the West Final.
Yeah, how about it? Yeah. Right, well, I wanted to talk about this. I guess last week after we recorded the podcast, the finalists for the awards at the end of the season were announced. And I just wanted to touch on a few of these. In the category of most outstanding player for the East, I was very happy to see William Stand back. Was there any competition for this in your mind, Joe?
I'm kind of racking my brain right now, yeah. And I can't think of anybody that's like number two.
Yeah.
There's a lot of quality players, but a lot of the guys that we would have thought of as the big time stars either didn't have that great of a year or hurt most of the year. So,
yeah. Well, I feel like if you consider Stanback the number one running back in the league, I think the gap between him and number two is probably further than at any other position in the CFL this year. So in that respect, he's definitely the most outstanding running back. So, you know, why not give him the nomination from the East? And of course, in West, this was Zach Kolaros, which thousands of people were telling me all through the last half of the season, but I refused to admit it. And I'm still going down with the ship and saying Adam Big Hill was robbed. I just wanted to ask the one question here: what happens if one side of the CFL nominates a defensive player for MOP? Do they nominate a different player on that side for defensive player of the year?
Some writers will do that.
Oh, okay.
It just depends on how the votes.
Okay. Vote, really. Right. So I was wondering if the league had a thing for that. Because of course, you know, the NFL has shifted their format to MVP and then offensive MVP and then defensive MVP, and those players are different.
Yeah, I spend very little time caring about how these things get determined.
Okay. In any case, these are nice argument starters in a normal season, not so much this year in the CFL. For defensive MVP,
this year it's kind of like who survived.
Yeah, kind of, especially with one of these player awards I want to talk about, but not defensive player, which of course is Adam Big Hill from Winnipeg versus Simone Lawrence for Hamilton. Now, even with your fandom aside, there's really no argument here, right? This is going to be Big Hill.
I would think so. I think he's got the nod on that. He seems to have a little bit more of a wholesome reputation around league circles too, just given the play on the field. So, yeah. I think it's, I don't see that going any other way right now.
And plus, even for an already outstanding player, he had for him an outstanding season. I like these nominations here for the special teams. Now, here we have Devonta Dedmon, who only had three touchdowns, whose kick return average yards per return was actually down from last year. His punt returns was exactly the same. But again, he's going up against Rene Paradis. Now, Joe, I guess the question I have for you is, do they do this voting before the playoffs?
I couldn't tell you that. I mean, if it happens now, that might be a slightly different result, which is very, very unfair, to be completely honest, because Paradis had a great year. We can talk about one game all we want, but it's been solid all season. So,
well, thanks for the permission, Joe, because I am going to talk about that one game a little bit later on in the show. probably as much as I want and a few other people want me to. Finally, for coach of the year, I guess, you know, in the East, Ryan Dinwiddie is the pick. I mean, I'm not sure who else.
The clear candidate there.
Yeah, I don't know who else you would go with there. But I think you have to give it to Mike O'Shea, right? I mean, again, this is really one of the best single seasons in the CFL in a long time.
It is. The tendency for this type of award, in my experience, tends to be the coach that surprises more people than not tends to get it. Whereas the coaches that have been on top for quite a while tend to have a harder time winning it as they go. Unless there's no obvious, hey, look at me, I came out of nowhere candidate like Ryan Dinwiddie. So I can actually see that going Dinwiddie's way. I would go O'Shea simply because it was clear that Dinwiddie was still having some rookie struggles. He was very, very, very good about motivating his team and getting them to play well. Some of the in-game stuff was a little bit more dicey, but that's things you can learn over time. Things like leadership and things like motivation, that's a little bit harder to learn as you go. And he's got that in spades, clearly. So I think he's in great shape going forward. I just don't know if I can quite pull the trigger on him as the coach of the year over O'Shea, who has got a more proven track record and tends to be probably a little more conservative in his game day decisions. He's got the team to do so, but he also doesn't tend to make any huge blunders either.
Yeah, Dinwiddie is going to get the votes of the people whose memories stretch to preseason when this guy was handed a shuffled deck and told to make something cohesive in a hurry.
And he did. Like, that's his argument right there.
Right. And on top of that, they even managed to pull the trigger on their starting quarterback in the season. And it was by choice. And so, you know, again, like, that's without missing a beat. And so those are pluses in Dinwiddie's favor right there. But I don't know. I'm kind of pulling for O'Shea here just a little bit because I think this was a memorable season for Winnipeg. And I think it's going to go.
Probably not. The two losses that at the end of the year are going to look a whole lot different in the record books in 20 years than it looks on the ground right now.
Yeah, but we know better, Joe, because we saw it.
We do, but are we going to be the ones making the historical arguments in 20 years? I hope so, but we might not be.
Are you doing the 2021 edition of Folds now?
I'm not the one creating that, no, but I will be the first in line to buy that sucker. Well, I suppose depends on how the next couple weeks go, but yes, absolutely. I'll probably get it no matter what, but playing with that team, I'm going to have a lot of fun.
Well, just because I was thinking that this would be a way to, you know, play your part in writing the history of this season would be to write that scenario for the board game. Okay, I wanted to touch on last week's games a little bit because we have some time to fill on this podcast, and because there was only two games and there was some food for thought. So I think the story of that first game. So, you know, the Alouettes are up 3-0. That's not a huge lead, you know, and it's based solely on that controversial field goal about which Joe and I argued on Twitter for a good portion of the first half afterwards. At this point in the game, so we're talking about 23 plus a little bit minutes into the game. At this point, the Alouettes have had the ball just under 60% of the time. I love that time of possession statistic. Okay. Harris at this point is 10 of 13 for 136 yards. Yeah, nothing brilliant. But with the snow falling, I kind of feel like a ball control game, Kari Jones doesn't mind doing that. There's no gunslinger in the game for him. So I think that, you know, he's interested in holding onto the ball, not turning it over, da-da-da-da-da. Well, sure enough, turnover. Harris is sacked by the appropriately named Dylan Wynn. who, you know, causes a fumble. Wynn picks up the fumble. And then all of a sudden, Hamilton whips off 20 points. Everybody talks about the momentum trip. And basically, you know, Hamilton cruised the rest of the game. They didn't need to score the rest of the game. The Alouettes could not catch up. Now, a few years ago, both footballoutsiders.com and Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com crunched the numbers and made the case that momentum doesn't exist. Right? There's no way to statistically show that momentum has any sort of significant effect on the game. But it sure feels like it sometimes. Now, Joe, my question for you is two parts. Okay. One is, do you believe in momentum in sports, especially football? And two, when you're making games, when you're making scenarios for the game, how do you account for that? Or do you?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's handle the thing as to whether it exists or not. I think sometimes it gets overblown. It's like you're trying to attach a narrative to somehow when a game swings. But at the same time, I think we would be wrong to say it doesn't exist at all. Because think of it this way. You've been in control of the game for 23 minutes. You haven't scored a lot, but you're in the lead. The next thing you know, like 3 or 4 minutes later, you look up at the scoreboard and it says 20-3. You're in hostile territory and it's snowing. Tell me that doesn't affect you in any way.
Right. I feel like that momentum is kind of like a quantum state. Like you can only observe it after it happens. Right? You know, it's like hitting 20 on the roulette wheel like 4 times in a row. You know, it's just, you can only see it after it happens that was part of the algorithm of the universe and everything just lined up there. Right? I mean, okay, they got the momentum. That momentum lasted for 7 minutes because, you know, they only got what? No, they actually got 2 turnovers after that, but only scored 3 points. And so that momentum was pretty short-lived. Now, of course, you know, halftime tends to kill, I think, any sort of rhythm. But still, I mean, if that's momentum, that's really short.
Yeah, it's not going to be a thing. It's not going to be a thing where one play is all of a sudden going to swap the entire game on you.
Yeah.
As far as how you feel the whole way. But like that next 3, 4, 5 minutes where Montreal kept turning the ball over because they were discombobulated, to use a word, that certainly existed.
Okay. All right. Now, how do you incorporate for that in what is basically a logic game? Can you incorporate that in both?
Not really. No.
Okay.
The best you can do, given that you have between 0 and 24 points to show what a team is worth. And generally you're between 7 and 16 at the high and low ends, really, because you can only get so far from average. Well, what you can do is if a team doesn't quite fit the profile, like they rack up a lot of yards, but they don't score a lot of points, is you could modify those numbers. And by that, I mean, let's say you have a team. They're a bottom basement team. They've won 3 games all season. They happen to be like fifth or third in the league in offense because they rack up a ton of points in garbage time. Well, the way you modify that in cold snap is you can take that. You can give players half numbers. Where instead of 0, 1, or 2, the 3 states that exist, there's actually states in between those,
okay,
which are half points, either a 1 with a minus, which indicates that if you're on the opposing side of the field, you become a 0, or a 0+, which means if you're on the opponent's side of the field, you actually go from 0 to 1. So it changes based on where you are in the field. So if a team puts up a lot of yards but not a lot of points, well, they're going to have a lot of 1 minuses in there to show that, yes, they can move the ball, but when it comes time for crunch time, and if you're really, really off, where a team gets, say, 50 points across their 4 platoons, but they're 6th place, and that would put them as a 3rd place team, there's a even a further modifier, which is like a little asterisk next to their number, saying, in the 4th quarter, drop these. So if you're
vicious,
or on the opposite hand, if you're 6th place in points on platoon but 3rd place in the league, stars next to them saying, right, increase these when it comes time for crunch time.
Okay,
it's not a perfect system, but this is, but given what little you have to work with to make the game engine sing, it's what you can do to modify, right, the pure yardage.
Right. Yeah. Some abstract stuff in team sports becomes, I find, impossible to simulate in games. The hot hand in basketball is a decent example, but my favorite example of this is the run support given pitchers, because it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It only works on an abstract level. You know, there's no way to justify it at all. You just can't do it. But yet it seems to exist. Guys like Steve Carlton got tremendous run support all through their
career. Jack Morris.
Yeah. They're a perfect
example. Pitching to the score.
Yeah. So I don't know what you're supposed to do about that, but there you go.
You don't. There's only so much you can do.
The mysteries of sim gaming are endlessly fascinating to us, but I'm not sure how fascinating to all the listeners. So let's move on to last week's Western final. Okay. Then a little bit of talk lately about how, let's say, boring this season has been in the CFL, how, you know, on CFL it has been. Well, I hope those folks are watching this game. Because this game had a lot of what CFL fans watch the CFL for. We had 2 quality quarterbacks, each pretty much offset, at least in that first half, by a guy having a career day in the secondary on the opposing team, but combining for 69 attempts in this game. Now, it's been a long time since we've seen that many attempts in a CFL game. You had a punt return touchdown, and 13 field goal attempts in this game. 13. And you got double overtime. Game of the year, Joe?
It certainly didn't lack punch, that's for sure.
Okay. Now, my heavy question for you, that I think I know the way you're going to go here, so I'm ready to push back a little bit. In football, is there any situation in which you can hang a loss on one player, particularly if it's a you had one job kind of thing? Can you?
It's hard to say no to that, because some players' performances are very important to their team, and when they're not there, it's very obvious it's not there. But when you're talking about a game with 150 to 160 plays, it's really, really hard, unless one player is making mistakes on like 80 of them, to say that one player costs you the entire game. Now, one play could, and that player could have had a bad day and didn't make that play, but you had 150, you had 149 other plays to do something about that.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, would you say the same thing to a blown call by the ref? I mean, it's like, you know, because I've done that. I've said that, you know. I don't know if it works in all cases, but sometimes, oh, the ref blows a call and you blame the whole game on that. Well, you shouldn't have put him in that position. But in this case, you're putting the player in the position because he's supposed to get the job done. You know, of course, everybody knows I'm talking about Rene Paradis. And I'm not even necessarily talking about the field goal in the double overtime. Because if he had made that reasonably close one to end the first half, the entire complexion of that second half would have been different.
Well, and we're talking about an entire different game, yes.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, when he missed the first one, I was like, ooh, that's going to hurt, man. I'm going to lose my bet. I'm going to talk about betting this game in a minute, too. You know, but the second one was the killer. It was like, oh, my God. You know, and I just had a feeling I was going to miss it. And it was just brutal. Too bad for him. Because otherwise, great game. You know, I don't want to suggest that the Stamps were playing perfect and that only Paradise could be blamed. I mean, Bo Levy didn't have a single touchdown pass in this game. So, you know, I can't, like, say that everything was running perfectly for Calgary. But, you know, I mean, this was one of the best games I've seen in the playoffs. I mean, they looked really good.
I also thought that Dave Dickinson had a number of questionable calls. Including challenging a dicey at best pass interference call in the second quarter, I want to say, early on. Like, if you're going to gamble your challenge that early, you'd better be right. And when it comes to pass interference challenges, that's not a guarantee at all, no matter what. But when it's like one of those that's a toss up, you're not only gambling your one of your two timeouts for the entire game, which could have helped them late in the fourth quarter, but no more challenges. That could have been something. It didn't end up being a huge game changer, but it was just questionable coaching all around on that. And then I have a real issue with the second overtime with the offensive play calling.
Right.
Going long.
Right.
As much as they did, and not doing anything to get closer for a field goal attempt if you needed it.
Right.
Which they clearly did, and it didn't come through.
Yeah, that was something that I was going to remark on. Is like, what, twice on first and 10, you're going to do the running over the shoulder catch, which Bo Levy hasn't, you know, shown that he can consistently make all of the.
He has had a good game. Kadeem Carey's had a good game.
Right. I mean, like, so, yeah, I did question that as well. And I thought he got away with it because they ended up converting that first one on second down.
But, and they went right back to it.
Right. So I was just like, wow, you really are not worried. Total gambler, man. I'm not sure I want to be on the same life that people as this guy.
And given it was the, lacking a better term, the top of the inning, like, you had the chance to set what the Riders would have had to catch you with.
Right.
And instead of trying to grind it out, get as close as you could, take the three if you have to. It was, let's see if we can get it all on one play, and if we can't, well, didn't do their kicker any favors on a cold day.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that for the people betting this game, this turned out to be insane. I mean, this has got to be one of the things that's lost when you start talking, you know, the lack of no lead is safe this year, you know, not too many late comebacks, the sort of tendency for teams to pull away, is that it kind of takes the suspense of betting out of the game, in that, you know, the result is known pretty early. You know if you're going to win or lose. Now, this game opened with Calgary +3 as the line. Okay. Enough people, stupid people like me, figured that Calgary was going to win this game outright, even, but they were certainly going to take those 3 points. Right. So enough people played this. So it actually got down to, you guessed it, 2.5 by kickoff. Okay. So if you caught this thing late, you were on either side. Okay. So if you have Saskatchewan -2.5 and Calgary +2.5, you're sweating out every single play of those overtimes. You know, because you don't know which way this is going to go. And in the end, ultimately what happened was this. Basically, everybody who bet the point spread in this game either pushed, in fact, the majority of bets pushed, right? Because it took a long time for that +3, -3 to go down to +2.5, -2.5. Or you won by half a point, or you lost by half a point. And since I was one of the people who lost by half a point, obviously this game was fixed.
Hey, should I tell you about how much I won my fantasy matchup by?
Oh, please do.
0.2 points. I had Begelton in the final game.
Nice.
And that was like, Mike and I matched on 3 of 5. He had Banks against Mike Bagleton. I had Reggie White of the Alouettes versus one of his Ticats guys. I forget who. But I knew going into the final game, once it's established, once you can see who they have, it's like, okay, it's Bagleton and he needs 17 points. And he got like 16.9 because I was I'm like, 17 points. He needs that and I win. I got 16.9. So
nice. Well done. You got to love the 0.2 point victory in fantasy football, whatever that means. Okay, so what's left in fantasy football? You guys can still play another week, right?
Yep. It's the semifinals, me and Ryan from Canadian Football Countdown. And the two Turf District guys are going at it in the other semi.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Very
cool. Bomber on bomber crime and elk on elk crime.
Nice. All right. Well, at least the Elks have a shot at one championship.
It's the only one they're going to have a shot at.
All right, let's talk next week. The Eastern game starts with a line of Hamilton plus one at Toronto. Now, by game time, I expect this will probably be picked because I assume that more people are going to be betting on Hamilton. And this is basically a pick 'em already, right? Plus one, you're not going to have a tie in the playoffs. So I think more people are going to pick Hamilton in this game. So I think that the line is going to shift to a pick. So this season, this series is 3-1 Toronto this year. And two games were decided by one. But there's a reason this game is being played in Toronto. My feeling on this. Now, Joe, I'm up in the air about this one. Hamilton did not really blow me away against Montreal, except for like 7 minutes of the game. And, you know, as you said, basically 4 minutes of the game. So I'm looking to you for this one. How do you see this one playing out?
I think Toronto's the better team all around. I do believe Hamilton's a balanced team. They're also not very – they're going to be a team that you're going to have to beat. They're not going to beat themselves for the most part, but they're also beatable. They're not a team that's going to go out there and just blow the doors off of you either. So if you play a good solid game against them and don't give them the ball and you're half of the field a bunch of times, you get a shot. And Toronto's proven that 3 times this year.
Well, yeah, but again, like two of those games were 1 point and one of them was overtime. Let's see. I'm just calling up the weather because of course this is the time of year when the weather is critical to these games, as we saw this past weekend. Let's see. So we're looking at, freezing, at least in Fahrenheit, that's, you know, right around 32. So right around 0 Celsius by game time on Sunday. But this is rather far out for a weather report. So don't take that too seriously. However, low percentage of precipitation. So, yeah, I guess I'll take Toronto minus the point. I don't know. I fear Hamilton. I heard a great theory today online that really appealed to me for obvious reasons, but somebody picked Hamilton going to the Grey Cup and beating Winnipeg for Angelo.
This would be the year that sort of thing would happen too, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I hope they acknowledge that if it does happen. I assume they will. All right. So other game we've got, and I was wondering what this point spread is going to be. You've probably already seen, right? On this game, okay, damn. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you what it was. I was thinking about this after last weekend's game, and I was wondering if they would go as high as 10, but they did not, which is kind of what I feel like it should be, which they did not. It's Saskatchewan Roughriders, 8-point underdogs at Winnipeg. Now, we should say the Riders are now on a 5-1 run since their last bye, and Winnipeg won't have played a real game in a month, or at least not a proper meaningful game, let's say in a month, 4 weeks. Now, of course, the season series was, of course, Joe, do you want to say it?
It went well for Winnipeg. How about that?
2-0 Winnipeg. Nice wins there by the Bombers. And, last week, I really thought the Riders were going to get blown out after seeing that game and watching them put up 33, but also letting up 30. I couldn't help but get that this was their Grey Cup feeling. I kind of think that as long as Winnipeg doesn't come out completely flat, that they're going to really take care of business in this game. And I know I said that last week, but it's really tempting to take the -8.
Yeah, I think the first quarter is going to tell the story here. Winnipeg hasn't played a full meaningful game in like a month,
right?
Maybe even a little bit longer, but they have had their starters in from time to time over the past, or over the last three regular season games. So they're not completely cold. What will be cold is the weather. So as long as they can get through the first quarter on their feet, they'll take this game over, because I believe Saskatchewan is going to make a bunch of mistakes like they did against Calgary, and Winnipeg's really good at taking advantage of that. But if Saskatchewan gets in a situation where they've taken advantage of a bunch of Winnipeg mistakes in the first and make Winnipeg play catch up, I don't like that scenario for Winnipeg, because all the pressure's on them. The environment or the weather won't be conducive to that. Their offensive scheme isn't all that wide open. It's not a good scenario if they suddenly look up and see it's 17-3 with 11 minutes to go in the second quarter. And that's on the table because they haven't played as a full unit needing a game for what, 4 or 5 weeks?
4 weeks.
It's on the table, but it's also not likely, in my opinion. I think O'Shea earns his coach of the year stripes in this game, has them ready to go, has them up. If they walk out of the first quarter with a lead, they're walking out after the fourth quarter with a bigger lead and on the way to Hamilton.
Would you take a shot at the score? Like, I've got the weather in front of me, so we can factor this in as well. Now, they've got it as between 5 and 17 Fahrenheit on Sunday with the possibility of snow showers. Sounds pretty miserable.
Welcome to Winnipeg in December.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, wait, why do we usually play the Grey Cup earlier in the year? Okay, so...
I don't know. That sounds pretty good to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's because you're not out there. What do you like for this score? I think it's real low scoring. Does Adam Bigel earn his DMOB here as well?
I think William Powell is going to have to be a key player for the Riders. And I think the Winnipeg defense is the best equipped in the league to stop them because of their front. I don't even think, yeah, you can call it a front seven, but really the strong side linebacker's been a defensive back for like 30 years now. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I think 30-12 feels right.
30-12. Wow. Okay.
Now, it's not going to be 30-12 the whole game. That's going to happen late, but it'll happen, I think.
Right. Yeah. You get that snowball, so to speak, effect at the end where the losing team is down by a good 15-16 points, and then they turn it over a couple of times, and then over under is 46, and you've got a healthy win by Winnipeg still going under that, so that under 46 sounds pretty good as well.
I would say so.
Be like Joe's deduction. I think that's fair given the weather. I think when the over-under is a good 30 points higher than the weather, I think the under is a good bet in general. All right. So you're going to go with the Toronto-Winnipeg Grey Cup.
In Hamilton, which means it's basically a Winnipeg home game at that point.
Okay. Now, do you happen to know off the top of your head when the last Toronto-Winnipeg Grey Cup was?
It was the early 50s. I want to say 1950, wow. But it might have been 51 or 52.
Wow.
I just know that Hamilton started to show up against Winnipeg an awful, awful lot after that. Well, with Montreal and Edmonton going and having an epic three-game series in there, too. In
the 50s. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, epic if you're an Edmonton fan anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll have that historical stuff for you next week, I'm sure. Joe and I do like to geek out about past Grey Cups. So we can talk some of that next week, and we'll be talking the Grey Cup next week. Thank God there's not an extra 5 week until the Grey Cup. Right, Joe, how are you going to take us out, man? Go Bombers?
Yep. I like 30-12. It feels right.
All right. All right, then. I'm going to close it out. Au revoir, mes alouettes for 2021. This has been the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast. Enjoy the conference finals. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.